I'm Jason Bradford.
I'm Asher Miller.
And I'm Rob Dietz. Welcome to Crazy Town, where the circular economy is turning used plastic diapers into Mountain Dew bottles.
Hi, this is Crazy Town producer Melody Allison. Thanks for listening. Here in Season 6, we're exploring escape routes, pathways that just might get us out of Crazy Town. In today's episode, Rob, Jason, and Asher are escaping technologyism. And here's a quick warning. Sometimes this podcast uses swear words.
Language!
If you like what you're hearing, please let some friends know about Crazy Town. Now, on to the show.
Guys, it is a beautiful day, isn't it?
Sure is.
And this is going to be a hard show because there's some just crazy stuff going on, right? I'm going to start off by acknowledging that I've been a little stressed out by climate news of late. Have any of you picked up on any of the stuff going on?
Yeah.
Of course you have.
Climate? Is there something wrong with the climate?
I think his thermostat's not working.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful day. So right here, right now,
you
no.
You don't need. Yeah, no, there's been some serious teeth-chattering stuff.
What comes to mind?
Well, let's see. We've hit 2 degrees C above pre-industrial temperatures, you know, for periods of time. It hasn't been consistent. Right.
So that's the opposite of teeth-chattering.
Yes.
There we go.
Yes. So what about the Amazon? See, I like savanna habitats.
Right, right.
Like,
we can maybe bring some
you go to the Serengeti or something, but there's all this news of we're nearing that tipping point where the Amazon forest dies off.
I remember being papers about this in the early 90s of people like stressing about this, the hydrological cycle.
So there's been a lot of work, good work, scary work on climate tipping points. You're just talking about one, Rob, and we've got a bunch of others. There's like more than a dozen of them that have been documented in various states. And one that's actually getting a lot of attention recently, because there was a paper about this warning of the AMOC. Do you guys know what that?
Atlantic Meridional Oceanic Circulation.
Overturning circulation. Yeah. So that's basically the process in the oceans of currents carrying warm water up, you know, into the Northern Hemisphere, into like the North Atlantic. It's what keeps the UK from being a freezing hellscape.
Yeah,
that's kind of an oxymoron.
I mean, all of Western Europe kind of relies on this, because they're a way higher northern latitude than we are in the United States.
Right. So people are talking about, hey, this, you know, climate change, global warming, that could be good for us. We can start growing, you know, grapes in England. No, if this thing collapses, which, you know, the study that came out said, basically we're on track for this to hit a tipping point and to collapse. If that happens, I think last time that this happened, I think Europe or the UK was like 15 degrees
Celsius lower.
Colder.
Yeah, that's like, that's leading to ice age. That's ice age.
Yeah, exactly.
So which is weird. You have this frying tropics and ice age temperate zone happening at the same time. Now, the reason it would collapse is because of all the melting of Greenland. And so I recently read a paper, I'm going to get into this a little bit, where apparently they've underestimated how much ice has melted off Greenland by 20%. And this was reported by a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonpartisan reporting outfit known as Inside Climate News. And this article was incredible because it was saying it revealing this underestimate. But then it said, the good news, there was literally a quote, it says, it also held good news about the technological advancements used to make such measurements. And so I'm reading this thing like, what are they talking about? All it was that climatologists were kind of giddy that they had the new data analysis available through AI to like track this stuff and have more accurate assessments of what's going on. I couldn't find any other good news.
I guess that's good news.
There was nothing but horrific descriptions of the consequence of this ice loss.
Right.
And I'm like, what exactly is the good news?
Hey, that's the balance, right? We got some bad news
when
over here.
When you were doing reporting, Jason, you always have to show both sides. This is just 101 journalism.
And the climatologists, like, bless his little heart. He basically said, you know, okay, it's going to be really important for us to do carbon capture because this is going to start rolling. And in order to stop this process, we just got to start sucking the carbon out. And of course, I know that's just bullshit. That's not going to happen. So yeah. I couldn't find any good news.
Are you sure that the AI can't sequester the carbon?
Well, this is irony, of course. You know, the AI takes so much power to do this work, right? You know, all this math is going into how much power A is going to use. So it's just, you know, we're going to chart our climate doom while spewing even more and more atmospheric carbon in doing so.
We need to ask the AI how much it's melting the Greenland ice sheet by trying to figure out how much Greenland ice sheet is melting.
Yes, that's the crazy making part of all of this. Now, but I want to point this out. I want to point out what the sense I got was this sort of like this giddiness. The article had this sort of irrational giddiness, this attachment to technology as some sort of automatic good, both in its description of the AI, its mention of carbon capture, without really any understanding or of the absurdity of what they were saying. And so this is what today's episode is about. It's about what we're calling technologyism. It's these belief systems, the infrastructure around technology, and then the belief systems, our culture and how it deals with it. The analogy I thought of immediately was, you guys are familiar with the Stockholm syndrome?
I'm experiencing it right now.
It's where a kidnappee sort of falls for, you know, kind of falls into line with their kidnapper
and
starts cooperating and bonding. Yeah,
right. And it's almost like they there's this famous case where it was a bank robbery in Stockholm, Sweden, and these people were kept by the bank robbers for some days or weeks, I can't remember what, and they ended up testifying in court like, go light on these guys. They were really nice to us. So it's this idea that the psychologist came in and said, when you are basically captured and beholden to something, even though it's threatening, right? You want to relate to it. You want to be nice to it. You want to try to make sure that it understands you, that it cares for you. And so there was this give and take that happened.
So technology has kidnapped us all.
Yes.
And we're saying,
we're friends.
Yes.
We're friends. We really...
It's okay.
We like you, even though we're hostage to it.
Right.
And of course, the latest techno hero is this artificial intelligence. And so then I went into like a search for AI and climate change solutions. Right. And of course, there's a gazillion articles. And Google's in on this. Articles can be found. It's going to solve fusion, which of course is going to solve climate change, which is ridiculous. Advanced agriculture so that we can still feed ourselves even when the shutdown happens of the current, whatever. You know, one thing after another, environmental monitoring and adjustments of how species can like adapt because AI is going to help. All stupid. Everything was stupid.
It's almost like consumerism. If you buy one more thing, you'll be happy. If you put in one more piece of technology, it's going to fix it. Like the fusion thing. Look what we did when we got a fossil fuel bonus.
Right.
We've wiped out ecosystems everywhere. If we had fusion, what the hell would we wipe out then? The rest of the solar system?
And this is what kills me, is that none of this does anything aside from increasing human ecological footprint, accelerating growth, extending overshoot, making overshoot even greater so the fall is even higher. And I have yet to see a single instance where anyone is proposing to use AI to manage what we need, actually, which is this rapid, sustained, and as fair as possible contraction of the human enterprise without getting the four horsemen involved.
No, I think... Isn't that OpenAI's new motto, extending overshoot?
Well, it is interesting. Remember Google's old motto, right?
Yes, like, break shit or something.
No,
don't do evil.
Don't be evil.
Don't be
evil.
Who
is break shit?
That was Facebook. Okay. I think that was Zuckerberg. But I think the Stockholm syndrome thing is really on point because there are a lot of people
ringing
sounding bells.
There's some kind of alarm out there.
Okay? I think the warning's a siren. You ring
it's
bells.
It's about
you
corrupted
warn
my
sirens.
Brain.
You don't warn sirens. What are you guys talking about?
Warning sirens.
This episode is actually just being brought to you by AI versions of ourselves. Yeah. It's going a little off the rails.
Some glitches.
We're hallucinating right now, like the AI.
Okay, let me get back to the
figure
point.
Figure yourself
there
out.
There are a lot of people sounding the alarm.
Yes.
They are worried about
the
risks of AI, including all the people that are full on propelling us into the AI age, right? But when you see stories or you have people who are like, oh, but we're using it for this really helpful purpose.
Right.
Right. Like, yes, it presents an existential threat to humanity, but it's actually helping us better understand the existential threat of climate change.
Yes.
Right. And that's exactly like your kidnapper, you know, basically not letting you leave, holding you hostage, but they give you a nice cup of coffee every once in a while. Right.
Yeah. You can use the bathroom.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So nice.
You don't have to sit in your own waste. Yeah. They're so nice.
Okay. So that's, I guess, an expression of technologism, that sort of belief set. But, let's talk about some of our favorite examples of...
This is a fun part of the show.
We're technology from kind of our own lives.
Let's lighten it up.
Yeah.
Favorite, firmly in air quotes here, right?
Well, I'm going to share a story from a recent-ish storm, right? Where we had snow and ice. And in fact, the Pacific Northwest was basically one just ice hockey rink for a little while.
Yeah, like a week and a half.
It was wild.
Yeah.
I had to leave my house on my ass, literally, because my driveway is very steep.
I know. I'm glad I'm not on a hill.
You actually renamed it the assway instead of a driveway.
I did, yeah. And then we actually lost power for a little while.
Uh-huh.
And when we lost power, we lost heat in my house.
Right.
Now, I would love to say that's because we have an electric furnace and all that stuff. But the truth is, we didn't replace the furnace when we bought our house. It's still a natural gas furnace. Okay. So we should have been okay, but here's the problem. The previous owners actually installed a Nest thermostat, okay?
And this is one of those like house control smart homey things?
Exactly.
You poor thing.
And
you got a home with
guess what it needs to work?
Electricity.
It needs electricity. So we had a gas furnace. It would have worked.
You could have MacGyvered it. Gas. Put a screwdriver in there.
I didn't want to fuck with that. But I couldn't turn it on because I didn't have electricity to power the fucking thermostat.
Right.
Yeah, it's great.
That is outstanding. I mean, smart homes, let's talk about how smart they really are.
Yeah, they're dumb homes.
But we want to talk about technology. I'm going to go simple. Okay. Here's mine. When I was a kid and I wanted to, say, bake some cookies in the oven.
Sure.
Easy bake oven.
Well, there was just a little dial.
Oh,
you just
yeah.
turn it to like 350 degrees or whatever, put your cookies in.
Right.
Now, on our stupid ass oven, it takes 27 button clicks.
Yeah.
Like, I got to hit the right one to tell it to bake. Then I got to hit this little plus button 12 times to get it to the right temperature. Then if I forget and put my cookies in, but I didn't hit the last button, it doesn't start cooking.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You just got to be a little patient. Once they integrate the Internet of Things with every single appliance, you could just ask Siri or whatever, Alexa, turn on the oven to 350 degrees.
Yeah. Right? Well, it was so hard to turn that dial back in the day. I'm looking forward to
your wrist. Yeah. You know,
this is one of my pet peeves on it, the complexity of all the technology, the fact that there's all these steps. There used to be very simple mechanisms. My son talks about this, it's just like metal resistor or whatever, and you're just changing the resistance of the coil, and it's just the dial does that. And it's all mechanical. Like, you could take it apart and actually see how it works. Now, it's all little computer chips that are impossible to fix. Once they break, you're like...
Once one little piece breaks.
It's a brick.
The whole thing's
dead. Yeah. It's a sculpture.
Yeah.
And then you've got to find a replacement little specialized chip made in some Taiwanese factory.
But I like that. That makes us all artists. All we have to do is break our technology and we're sculptors.
Great.
Now, you guys are bringing up some very, very quaint, fun technologies. But I got sucked in... to a study of my favorite technology.
No. Where are we going?
Play. We got a clip for this.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Isn't that wonderful? Plastics. This movie, The Graduate, one of my favorite movies, Dustin Hoffman, young actor at the time, 1967. I was born in 1969. And this definitely was the era when plastics were just starting to take over.
I blame this fucking Mr. Maguire guy. It's his fault.
It is amazing, the coincidence. Like, it seems like that's really when plastics kicked off in a huge way.
Yes, during our lifetime, essentially. It just, the world flipped. But let me just back up. Well, let's do a little history together of plastics. The first plastic was made to try to replace elephant ivory in billiard balls in the late 1800s. And this was a substance called celluloid, which was derived from cellulose,
So this was like it was trying to solve for a problem. This is a good cause, right? Like, yes. Let's stop killing elephants for their ivory. And
well, it didn't work for billiard balls. They found something else eventually, but it did work for fountain pens. Oh, so some of the fountain pen geeks are really into celluloid.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and once the plastic came off the assembly line and we started figuring out how to make it, then it's just finding better uses. So apparently it was very important in World War II for the helmets and, of course, the parachutes. So.
Yeah, nylon was a big deal. Yeah. Nylon was replacing silk, so in the parachute business.
And then, of course, you have a technology in search of a market at that point. And of course, once the war was over, it was just off and running. Now right. All your shoes are made of nylon. Mm-hmm. All your sleeping bags are made of nylon.
Yeah.
You know, probably most
stockings.
Of the, yeah, everything.
And we're seeing the same dynamic actually happening right now, because as there's a push to phase out fossil fuels for energy use, the fossil fuel industry itself is trying to pivot a little bit and looking to shift from extraction of natural gas in particular towards petrochemicals,
right?
So they're like, hey, if we're going to get regulated out of producing energy, let's put it into plastics instead.
Yeah. I feel like Exxon's like, what's the second worst thing we can do? What's the third worst? Let's get into to tobacco next. You know?
Right. And actually, the International Energy Agency projects that petrochemicals are set to account for over a third of the growth of demanded oil by 2030 and about half by 2050, right? So more than aviation, more than trucks, more than shipping, it's just going to go into more plastics, right? And a lot of that is going to the global south, by the way.
Right.
We need to rebrand. Instead of petrochemicals, it needs to be toxic shitticles.
Toxic shitticles. I like it.
Nice. We're getting into the toxic shitticle business.
So I was reading this BBC article because, of course, people are now worried about plastics and how much there is and the problems they cause. And so even though there are all these projections about more and more plastics, others are fighting this and trying to like find a way out.
Yeah.
But this article was basically talking about how it's so embedded in everything in modernity that all these experts were scratching their heads and they didn't know how to back out. They like, how do we even have modern civilization without these? And there are now monstrous publications that, you know, I followed the links to, but I couldn't read. but people are working so hard to come up with schema for what's an essential plastic and what are the new chemistry methods to maybe make it less toxic so it doesn't, you know, kill everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a good point too, with the toxicity of plastics and some of the other human manufactured stuff out there. You've got it killing wildlife directly. Mm-hmm. You've got it disrupting the endocrine system.
Yeah.
You have it going up and down food chains, and these particles, they break down and break down to where now you have the term nanoparticles and microplastics, and they can do things like prevent an animal from being able to absorb nutrients.
Right.
I mean, we're talking cellular level disruption.
Yeah.
In the department of a picture is worth a thousand words, I remember Chris Jordan, our artist friend, he used to take photos of dead birds on Midway Atoll.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you would just see their guts just filled with plastic.
Yeah.
And of course, you can't even see the nanoparticles that are running through their cells.
I know. It's like the albatrosses and stuff. It's
And there you are, Jason, talking about them trying to figure out what are the essential uses of plastic, not recognizing that we're only talking about a number of decades.
I know.
Since, quote, unquote, this was essential.
How
yeah,
do
exactly.
we live?
But it's true. It's like hard to imagine for us. It's hard to imagine.
Right.
Like going to the grocery store and not getting everything in a plastic container or whatever it is.
Next holiday season, Jason, I'm getting you a wooden tennis racket with cat gut strings.
I think that would be cool, actually. if I could play against people who are also using
exactly. that. That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Right. You just get absolutely trashed by someone.
Right.
Yeah, so there are people who are trying to address the plastic pollution issue. And Rob, you talked about it breaking down into nanoparticles. And, you know, there are studies that show that we have tens of thousands of nanoparticles in our bodies. Mm-hmm. Fucking insane to think about it. But there are also concentrated areas in the world where plastics are kind of either going into the marine system or mm-hmm. elsewhere. And so there are people that are working on these gyres, right? Where the ocean currents have brought together massive amounts of plastic.
Garbage patches.
Yeah, yes. And also people working on rivers trying to, you know, get it sort of in a sense what they're thinking of as sort of the source right. before it gets into the oceans, right? Right? And Jason, you had Rob and I watch a couple of videos, right?
Yes.
From this one nonprofit that was started by a young guy yeah. who was trying to do some of this cleanup effort. And I don't want to shit on this guy at all. I think it's
please don't.
awesome. Like, you know, you hear stories of especially young social entrepreneurs right. or people, activists who are trying to address some of these issues, really trying to do great work. But think about the scale and also right. the fact that a lot of this is an expression of technologyism as well. So,
yes.
so like one of these, you know, you had us look at is this effort to clean the Great Pacific Garbage Patch by collecting a bunch of this stuff out there. I think they've gotten something like 100,000 kilograms yeah. right?
Yeah.
So,
well, woohoo!
Which is actually a lot, but when you think about the scale of the problem, there's like an estimated 100 million kilograms of yes. plastics in the North Pacific gyre. That's just one gyre, by yes. the way, right?
And it so keeps getting added to.
Right, yeah. So that's 1/10 of a percent,
yes.
right? You know,
it's madness.
Well, it's amazing where we've gotten to, because when you say the word gyre, in my mind, I now picture swirling garbage.
Uh-huh.
Like that's yeah. where it's gone because of what's happened.
I sort of think of it as like, if you were to say to somebody, oh, clean up that fart in that room and put it into a jar, right? They look at you like, what are you talking about? That's madness, right? Stop, just go outside and fart.
Right.
Fart in the room.
Or maybe change your diet so you don't have to fart.
Okay, I mean, I think people are going to fart, but it's like there's a way you manage it, right? But don't. Anyway, it's absurd. Like, you're not going to put it back in the jar. You're not going to this plastic has gone out, and there's no way you're going to have some sort of system that is going to clean it up like this.
Well, and how insane is it that we're asking these young people to try to basically stick their finger in the dike?
What the plastic know? Industry needs to be taxed out the wazoo so that they're like, oh, anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah. The scale of the plastic use is such that even though the petrochemical industry is thinking to themselves, oh, yeah, we got to convert oil to plastics instead of burning
it. Yeah, we got to make more of this plastic.
You know, the greener version of industrialism is saying, no, no, we can't use oil. We have to use biochemicals.
Right.
But the problem, I mean, you do the math, it's like, oh, so you're going to grow how many acres of hemp or whatever, or switchgrass, or cut down how many trees for the cellulose feedstock? It's like saying, oh, we're going to replace fossil oil with biofuels. None of it works.
So you'll go to the grocery store to get, you know, a bioplastic container, but there won't actually be any food in it because we've converted yeah. all the land for
yes.
for food production.
I think you guys are missing the point. There's only going to be a population of 12 people, yeah. and it's going to be the 12 CEOs of the biggest tech corporations in the world.
Like, who's going to grow my food? Anyway. Yeah.
The AI.
So then this is the rabbit hole I led down. So I'm following. This is almost like a history of like the people's bargaining.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
their captor, and and then the latest insanity is what's now called carbon capture and utilization.
Oh, so we moved from carbon capture and sequestration.
Yes,
because why sequester it when we could utilize it?
Exactly.
Yeah, great.
So
that's good thinking.
Now we've gone over in previous episodes. So if you're a new listener and you need to go back, you might want to listen to the one we did on May 10th, 2023 about David Keith, or May 1st, 2019 on technology and overshoot, where we talk about how absolutely insane it is to think that we can capture carbon dioxide in any kind of scale, the logistics, the energetics. Carbon dioxide is this molecule that's super happy to be carbon dioxide. It's fully oxidized form of carbon. So that to reduce it is energetically intensive. And so these people think it makes any kind of sense to go from carbon capture to then bioplastic. It's absolutely nuts.
Will you stop poo-pooing the dreams? I want a squirt gun and a rubber dog shit made out of CO2. Can I do that? Is that utilizing it?
Okay, I read another article. This is very painful. I'm going to go over this with you. So people do say, okay, the energetics sucks. We know this. They admit this. Okay, we're going to find enzymes then. We're gonna use AI, of course, to like figure this out for us and
make
it better.
Make more efficient.
Exactly. Yeah. But then, and so this is an article that was in Science News. I'm going to read this to you. Quote, it's morning and you wake on a comfortable foam mattress made partly from greenhouse gas.
Your own farts.
Yeah. You pull on a t-shirt and sneakers containing carbon dioxide pulled from factory emissions.
Oh my God.
After a good run, you stop for a cup of Joe and guiltlessly toss the plastic cup in the trash, confident it will fully biodegrade into harmless organic materials. At home, you squeeze shampoo from a bottle that has lived many lifetimes, then slip into a dress fashioned from smokestack emissions. Oh my God. You head to work with a smile, knowing your morning routine has made the Earth's atmosphere a teeny bit carbon cleaner. Now, I wanted to take ice picks and shove them into my brain after but I did not.
Is that a recycled plastic ice pick?
God, probably.
Knowing that you've done your bit to sequester more carbon in your skull.
Yes. Now, this same article has this graph projecting plastic production increasing from about 400 million tons in 2020 to 600 million tons by 2050. Obviously, this is all stupid as fuck. And I'm just like, I was apocalyptic at all this. And I'm going to slow down now.
Because, look, Jason.
Okay.
We have to accept that this continued acceleration and growth of all of this quote-unquote progress.
Yeah.
In other words, plastics.
Yeah.
Is going to continue. That's just a given.
That's
okay,
a given.
Jason?
That's a given. For all the
articles
I read.
So we got to figure out ways to sequester it, make it greener, utilize it, whatever it is, because the last thing we could consider doing is just not fucking making plastics.
That's the last thing.
All right. Well, look, let's all get into our smokestack pajamas or whatever it is that we use in our morning routine.
Smokestack pajamas.
Okay. So good. Wasn't it good? Who wrote that? It was brilliant.
That's great stuff.
I want to send him flowers.
But I mean, just saw this picture of Hugh Hefner for some reason.
Yeah, smoking jacket.
But let's talk about
smokestacking jacket.
Why? Well, on the Hugh Hefner front, why is this so seductive?
Oh yeah.
Like, why are we so drawn into plastic and broadly
just technology?
Technology, yeah. And I think the number one reason is the cheapness. Mm-hmm. Like, of course, it's without all the externalities, right? But often what happens is technology makes something we want to do less expensive. Yeah. So, you know, you used to have, I don't know, you drink your water out of your hands, right?
Right.
But some of that water got away through the space in your fingers.
So you grow a gourd.
Yeah.
Or get a coconut.
But it was hard to go get that maybe, or it breaks down. So then you make these plastic bottles, and it turns out they're very cheap to manufacture. Mm-hmm. So it's another money decision, and we're going to get to that later this season. But another decision that's made by money that shouldn't be.
Right. You're going to be more competitive if you keep adopting these new technologies that make you more efficient at some means of production.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of competitive, there's also a status thing with technology.
Yeah, there is.
And in our society, I mean, think about who the richest people in the world are, with the exception of Arnaud, the fashion dude who we've talked about. They're all technologists, right? So there's this idea of, like, you want to be the first one to get the Vision Pro, whatever.
You know, Apple, when I got my first Sony Walkman in 1984 or 5, I think.
You were hot shit.
I was hot shit.
Yeah.
I could run with that thing, and it wouldn't have that weird
We are losing status by the minute in this podcast space. These microphones.
I know.
Are from season one. And here we are in season six, this lower and lower status. Can we get some new shit in here, please?
Yeah,
exactly.
Now, the other thing that happens, though, is that let's say you're a laggard. You're one of these people like, oh, fuddy-duddy. And you're like, I'm keeping my VCR. And
as a paperweight. Right?
But eventually, that thing breaks. And you're like, I want a new VCR. I'm sorry. There are no
VCRs.
You've got to get the laser disc. Because that's the new big thing.
Yeah.
And
how old is a laser disc? What are you talking about?
I think he was in on the joke there, Rob.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the idea.
I wasn't sure. It's Jason. He might think a laser disc is the latest, greatest thing.
How that thing had like a 2 month life.
Yeah, I know. Laser disc career. Yeah.
Can I get it on 8-track?
Right. That had about a 4 month life.
You know, some things come back. Vinyl came back, baby.
Vinyl came back.
Which is made of plastic.
Yeah,
yes,
of course.
That was one of the early plastics. But the idea is that everything is now becoming, it all becomes obsolete eventually. And so that's the other thing, that you've got to basically get the new gadget, even if you want to do the thing you used to do with something perfectly good before.
100% you have to do. I mean, I have this iPad that was handed down to me from my dad, And we can't update it anymore.
No, it's too small. The memory's not right.
And we're talking about, this was like 6 years ago.
That happened to me one time too. So frustrating.
Well, for all you listeners, just hang on. Because in the next segment, we're going to have all new equipment.
It's going to sound great.
This is a message to all you crazy townies out there. Sometimes Jason, Asher, and I wish you could be here in the room with us when we're riffing on eco-modernist nightmares, the end of capitalism, the collapse of civilization, and lines from Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. Since you can't be here, maybe we could still be in contact in another way. If you've got a comment about the show, or you want to throw some shade at us, or you got a question...
Or you have a suggestion of escape route stuff.
Yeah, know? Yeah. Maybe you got a story of your own you want to share. Go over to Apple Podcasts or iTunes and leave us a review and write your comment there. In your comment, include your idea, whatever it is, and we'll think about sharing it in an episode.
How's this? I'll be back. Is that any good?
Oh my God, that's terrible.
You try it. You try it.
Get to the chopper! Listener feedback. This one comes in from Joe in Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Joe says, thanks guys for this. I started to listen a bit late in the game and still have some catching up to do. Good stuff though, so congrats. And he was responding in this comment to an email I had put out about how we'd been doing this for the last 6 years. And he says, hate to be a dick, but 5 years does not 6 years make. If you started on March 13th, 2019, well, you do the math. Happy 5th anniversary, gents. All the best from Barcelona.
He could have been such a bigger dick about that. Thank you, Joe, for very lightly pointing out how stupid Rob is.
I read the email you sent out, Rob, and I have to agree with Joe here. I thought, like, what are you talking about? We're starting...
Yeah.
Our sixth season.
We're in our sixth season.
But he the way Rob wrote it, it was like our 6 year anniversary or something. I agree. I thought it was wrong. I think now
it's a 6 year anniversary of us starting.
Joe's right. And look, he probably on the ocean test, the big five personality, he's gonna be low in agreeableness, but high in conscientiousness. And I think people like that, we need to listen to.
Well, I think the way you guys are siding with him and making fun of me puts you pretty damn low on that scale. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate you.
Welcome to the Marvin Harris Memorial Lens of Doom.
We sound great, right? We got all new equipment. People tell?
Dang.
Oh, yeah. They can tell.
We spent so long putting it up, I forgot to even mention it. But, oh, well. Okay, so Marvin Harris, remember, he's got this theory of cultural materialism where the infrastructure, the things that are around us, affect the policies, which is called the structure, which then in turn affects our beliefs, the superstructure. So we're trying to look at what is the infrastructure of technology and technologyism. And the first most important thing is you have to have a reliable source of energy, you know, something like a functioning electrical grid.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, as you said it earlier, Jason, without that, your technology is just sculptures.
Yes, beautiful sculptures. Yes.
Some more plastic beautiful molds than others.
Yeah. And if it sounds like you've heard this before, you have heard this before, because energy is the foundation of everything, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, without energy, none of this happens.
And it all becomes paperweights, which I don't know how much people need to weigh down their paper. Maybe we'll be getting back to that with fans instead of air conditioning or whatever. But a lot of paperweights without energy. Also, things like a very functional, mature transportation network, because otherwise the technology can't get spread everywhere. Think about building a car. You can't get all the pieces from all the different places unless you got this transportation network to do it. And then Another piece of the infrastructure is us. This highly, not the three of us, but
we're
the royal us, right? Of a highly specialized workforce.
That's not us.
No, we are as little specialized as one can be, but to be able to work with all this technology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so that's some of the infrastructure. Let's talk about some of the structures, right? So the rules, the, you know, the economics and all that stuff. I mean, that's where I want to start, is actually just the economics driving a lot of the fixation on technology and technologyism is about replacing costs of labor, which are considered the most expensive, right? So you do everything you possibly can to replace that. And mm-hmm. what we've done is replace labor with technology, using energy, fossil energy, effectively to replace human energy, human labor, right? And then you have a lot of funding going towards high-tech approaches, right? I mean, if you think about it, we've seen all these fads, you know,
yeah.
and some of them have been laughable on their face. NFTs, we had fun with NFTs for yes. a little while. You know, there's been a big push in recent years around crypto, but you just move from one to the other, and so much of it is focused on technology. And you could see actually now it's almost laughable where businesses are trying to seek funding. All they're doing is they're updating their slide decks, their pitch decks to include something about AI.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're using AI to do that update.
Yep, exactly. Sure.
Well, another place that you see the structure of technology is in our universities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of the land-grant universities here in the United States, a historic collection of universities where the government said, hey, we'll give you the land, and then, but you also, you have to teach about agriculture, and it's all techno-based now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you go to an ag school, like, you're not going to learn about agriculture. You're going to learn about technology.
Yeah.
And it's just built into the way those institutions run now.
Well, and speaking of building in, I mean, that's what the tech sector essentially has done. I mean, technology has obviously been adopted in industry and all that stuff. But when you think about the dominance of the tech sector itself, you know, we've talked before about, like, when we did our episode on speedism, you mm-hmm. know, the acceleration that's really being driven by computer technology in particular, right? It's so embedded now in every sector of society. Every industry effectively is dependent upon it. You talked about education, but it literally is everything. And what happens there is that it's like, that is, in a sense, co-opting all of the other sectors of society. So technology becomes the bedrock, the foundation for everything else as a structure, and it reinforces itself as a result.
Well, yeah. And we're seeing it right here. Our little sound mixer
yeah.
at the start of this
yeah.
session,
yeah.
for some reason, when we plugged it in, it wouldn't work. When we unplugged it, it went on. We're like, what is happening here?
Magic energy.
Yeah. And then we found another plug. But anyway, like, we're beholden.
Yeah, without that one piece of equipment. And this reminds me of when my wife's a physician, and I saw when they were starting to talk about, we're going to have to go to electronic medical record systems. Mm. And I went, oh, no. Because once you do that, you will be trapped. And sure enough, now, if the IT system isn't working, they can't see any patients. I mean, think about that. If you don't have electricity or your computer system is down, forget it. Just send everyone home.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
We're going to have to someday do a huge rant on the entire medical care system.
Well, you know, you're summing up this sort of the infrastructure, the structure. It all leads to then what, you know, the belief system about how to save modernity is the eco-modernism way. And that's what I think is where this all leads to in terms of superstructure, that there is no way backwards. The only way to keep going and to survive is to double down on technological progress.
Right.
And that's why your favorite recent piece of writing was Mark Andreessen's
yes.
Eco-Modernist Manifesto.
Unbelievable. I read it every night. Yes.
It's Jason's Bible.
It's right next to my bed.
I mean, there's no greater wisdom than pointing out that the precautionary principle is the most evil thing ever.
Evil. Yeah. Evil. Yeah. Those people, too. Poor people.
I think from a superstructure perspective, just thinking about the belief system, the worldview, I think technology and technologyism, I guess, has become in some ways synonymous with having a vision for the future. It's like hard for people to envision a future that's one that could be better,
right.
of progress, without it being tied somehow to technology.
Something more advanced,
right? And because otherwise you're left with like the idea of limited technology not only seems like impossible, it also feels, I think, for a lot of people, like it's going backwards somehow. Like we're regressing. We're not progressing, right? And you're left with like you're suddenly in bed with Ted Kaczynski and MAGA, you know, Steve Bannon traditionalism, and or you got to go live with the hippies in a commune or the Amish or something like that.
I'll choose the hippie commune, by the way, if I had to make a choice.
All the patchouli, man.
You don't want to sleep with Ted Kaczynski? You're be in bed with him, as Asher says.
Sorry for that visual.
Well, and I think it's also, it's stuck in people's minds that, hey, we've got a problem with climate that was caused by technology, but we're going to use technology to get out of that problem because it's what we're used to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's this terrible circularity, you know, use the same thinking to try to solve.
It's Econ 101, man. That's what they tell you.
The other thing that strikes me with technology is, I mean, most of us don't know how it works. So it's almost like, there's this,
or you push the button.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know how to plug things in. I'll give you that. But
although in this case, I don't know. It was like the opposite. We tried to plug in our mixer and it didn't work.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like it's magic. You expect it to work, but you have no idea how to fix it. But you don't have to think about it. And in today's world, our mixer blows up. Well, guess what? You just order a new one and throw that one out. Consequences be damned. And I think that's how most of us are acting.
But Rob, just imagine a world in the future where you take your mixer that doesn't work anymore and you could guilt-free just toss it in the garbage while you're sipping your coffee from a biofuel cup.
Well, honestly, that's what we do today anyway. We just...
Yeah, but this way you don't have to feel guilty about it.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful
carbon capture and utilization. I love it.
Nice.
Every decision I've ever made in my entire life has been wrong. My life is the complete opposite of everything I want it to be.
If every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right.
So in this do the opposite, Melu venue, this place of doing the opposite.
French, fancy.
Yeah. Mm. I thought it would be fun if we could each introduce some low-tech option that we embrace or that we love. And what immediately came to mind for me is brooms. Mm. I love a good broom.
Yeah, you can play Quidditch.
You're a witch, aren't you?
That is a techno broom, and I don't appreciate that.
Good catch.
Yeah. I use a broom to sweep the floor.
Nice.
And it works really well, and I don't even have to plug it in.
I have a broom, actually, that's made of like real piece of wood, like a branch or whatever, and broom sorghum.
Broom sorghum. And that's an actual, that's a species.
It's a cultivar of sorghum that they grew specifically so you could make brooms out of it.
Can we, you and me, let's get a business going.
Yeah,
here.
We can make
brooms. I got some laurel hedges I need to cut down. We can make handles out of that.
Yes.
I got a broom that's powered by a motor and, you know.
I hate you.
I could tell Alexa to, for, you know.
Hate.
I got that broom from the Mickey Mouse show. That
hate
one
you
the,
too.
What was that one?
You're talking about the broom from Fantasia?
Yes.
That's scary.
That's scary. Now, my favorite technology that is simple is the wheel hoe, because I have to weed a lot, and weeding is like it's the most important chore on the farm is the weeding, and a wheel hoe just makes the weeding, it's like the weeds go, it's like cutting butter. I could just like shoo, shoo, and undercutting the wheel. Oh, it's beautiful. So anyway,
you have your simple things. Like I used to have a kind of running thing with a former colleague of ours at Post Carbon, Todd. Brilliant. Looking at the world and trying to figure out what technologies exist right now that would be like post-carbon ready. If let's say just like, I don't know, we had an
EMP
thing or something, you know?
Right.
So escalators. Escalators are fantastic.
They
know, it's high energy, you know, modernity, no way of getting from the bottom floor of the mall to the top floor so you can go get your Cinnabon.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
If
Cinnabon is on the lower floor.
Right.
Okay.
That's true.
But the mattresses at Macy's are always on the third floor. I didn't understand. Like,
that's true. Yeah. But imagine the mattress is made out of greenhouse gases.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but if the power goes out, You can still walk the escalator.
You can still get your mattresses. Right.
And over time, as the wind and water erodes the frozen escalator, it becomes a ramp.
Right, exactly. And then you got your e-bikes. Amazing technology. I know both of you have e-bikes.
I love my e-bike.
I don't have an e-bike, but really incredible technology. Yeah. If, you know, you can't charge it, the battery fails, whatever, you can still pedal that thing.
You just, you just drop an E.
I can't go 40 kilometers an hour on it, though.
I know.
You got to know which E to drop, because otherwise it would be an e-bic.
And here's another one, RVs. Hey, I give RVs shit.
Okay.
But hey, no more fuel.
Yeah.
It's a home.
It's a home.
There you go.
I know. Okay. Okay. Now let us speak in generalities.
Generalities, yeah.
Generalities.
Can you say with a French accent like Rob did?
Je peux parler le français un peu. So, le fromage. Anyhow. Pinot Noir.
Shot the hell up.
You don't even know what you're saying.
Zut alors. No, I know all this stuff. Okay. So, a vision for a different infrastructure. Now, what I think about, like, if I were to imagine a world that was sane, I would imagine one where people are using technologies that they can understand how they work, they can fix it, and maybe they can even make it themselves, or they know somebody because, you know, like, I'll make the broom if you make the whatever. And so that's my vision for the kind of infrastructure we would have.
Like accessible technology.
Yes.
Appropriate scale technology.
Mm-hmm.
Human-centered technology.
Yes. Maybe using more local, simple materials, right?
Well, and let's go back to plastics here for a little bit. You know, Asher, you talked a lot about the guy that we watched the videos where he's taking plastic out of the ocean and then also kind of netting the river mouth into the bay and collecting plastic out of that. Like, that's an infrastructure. But what about instead of that, we have an infrastructure that just doesn't have that input stream of plastic to begin with? How's that for a vision?
That's ridiculous, Rob.
Well, this is what kind of really bothered me about those videos. I mean, I applaud the effort going into cleaning up. I do. But it's obvious that it was really bought into technologyism. The whole the videos had this sort of, we can do it, sort of giddy vibe with this sort of upbeat music and a lot of glad handing and stuff. And really nice looking people who were young and vigorous and into problem solving. And what I wanted one of them to do at least once was turn to the camera and say, shame on you.
Yeah. Why are you making me do this?
Shame on you, and get angry at us because we should not be having to clean up your fucking mess. That's what I want them to say. And so that's what kind of bothered me about it, is that this should not be the problem of some nonprofit with a bunch of young good doers to solve.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about a vision for a different structure, right?
Okay.
So obviously we need to have laws that help limit the most advanced and dangerous technologies and also encourage the kinds of technologies that we want to have, the ones that you were sort of envisioning.
Mm-hmm.
We're investing money and time and resources into low-tech responses to the climate and biodiversity crisis. Like, you know, we're not pouring money into CCS or whatever the CCU,
yes,
you know, whatever better, other acronym they're going to come up with in the future. You know, no air capture bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Putting instead into regenerative agriculture and preserving biodiversity, right?
Like wheel hose for everyone.
Yes, everyone gets a wheel hose.
Yeah. Well, that reminds me of my favorite presidential candidate, Vermin Supreme. He wanted to give everyone a pony.
That wouldn't be bad.
That's a low tech,
you
know, solution.
Pony, you could put a wheel hoe behind
you
it.
Collect the manure and fertilize your garlic bed.
So, you know, it's about where we're putting our money, which is where kind of the economy is pointing. That's part of the structure of society and the laws and what we're incentivizing and what we're punishing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shifting where those go. Now, we have missed opportunities to do this, to regulate, to limit, you know, when we're thinking about like cars.
They go too fast to be a good, safe biker. Right, exactly.
With plastics, we've talked about that, right? So maybe we keep moving the goalposts here. AI, you talked about AI, Jason. You know, this is kind of the newfangled technology that everyone's excited about.
Right.
But it's also an opportunity for us to say, wait a second, you know, maybe we need to regulate this.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, if we can get those infrastructure changes and those structure changes, it'd be a hell of a lot easier to change our belief systems.
Right.
I'm not real confident that we're going to get there. So we're going to have to work on changing our belief systems even before we're all pushing wheel hose down the road.
Let me just say really quickly, I think this is a really important point. Just because we point out through Marvin Harris's work that infrastructure has this huge influence on structure and superstructure doesn't mean that we can't influence it the other way, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have to ultimately change the infrastructure, but we can be operating at the structural and superstructural level.
Well, and I chew gum and walk at the same time.
Yeah, I can't do that, but
right.
But I can applaud you while
thank you.
I think that's where we are because we live in this system, you know, and we are, whatever, we're working with laptops in front of us and microphones in front of our faces.
Newfangled microphones.
But trying to let go of the belief that technology is everything and it's going to save us.
Right.
Because once you let go of that, then you can believe in a different world and you can start working on a different infrastructure and you can start supporting different policies. And I think a corollary to that is this idea that there's value. There's a quality in doing things manually, like using a wheel hoe versus a tractor. Mm-hmm. It does a lot more for soil health, right? You're not compacting things, and it does a lot more for atmospheric health. You're not blowing a bunch of CO2 and other toxins into the into the air. So like just recognizing the quality, you know, pace might change, but that's okay in the world that we're inheriting. And then you can also, once you've let go of that embracing of technology, you can just set limits in your own house, in your own life, and practice them. I mean, it's going to be a different line for different people. You know, like maybe you're such a purist, you won't get an e-bike. You have to just get a bike. Or maybe you're so pure, you won't get a bike. You have to walk. Whatever your limit is, go with it. But just practice and see how it works.
I think that's a great perspective. And I let's give some people now some who's who. Like who's doing some, if they want to look up some stuff and get some inspiration. So I think a good place to go at the individual and household scale on infrastructure is Krista Decker and his Low Tech magazine. He's got books also that have like anthologies that have compiled these things, and they are quite amazing. So I'm very impressed with, he's a treasure, I think.
Yeah, it's like technology, but low technology, along the lines of what you were talking about, something you can understand, something you can fix. I mean, some of it's actually kind of complicated, but way less complicated than what industrial society would suggest.
Right, because all of these things are things you should reasonably be able to do with simple tools.
Like he talks about low-tech solar.
Right.
And, you know, so he has like, here's a solar panel you could actually build with local materials.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. There's another spot. I think Chris is in Europe, right? Is he in Belgium?
Barcelona.
He's Belgian, but he lives in Spain.
Okay. Well, there's one here in the United States in Wisconsin called the Low Technology Institute. And it's a nonprofit. And I think they're sort of like the practical side of what we talk about at the Post Carbon Institute. They're all about identifying household and community scale solutions for subsistence in the post-fossil fuel world. So again, this is like, what technology can we apply that has a chance at sustainability? And I was just kind of looking through their website and found something called the 10-mile building challenge. So a lot of people, when you say you want a sustainable structure, a building or a house, they think LEED certified, which is kind of like you can get the platinum level or the gold level, and it's about how much energy does this skyscraper use.
Right.
But the folks over at Low Technology Institute, they're like, no.
Right.
We don't need that. What we need is, how can you have a building with really low embedded energy made from local materials?
I totally, this stuff really excites me. And I think like the folk school movement is a really interesting one as well. And you can take classes on these. And my thought is like, just become an expert in one of these things, right? Like
How to make a broom.
How to make a broom or whatever, or you know, how to farm with a wheel hoe as your main weeding tool. Just maybe find something. You know what? I want to grow willows that are turned into baskets, which become the alternative to all the plastic crap that we have to hold things.
Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds good. Well, let's talk about the societal scale then. And we were talking about structures that either promote or put technologyism into play. If we're talking about shifting those, there are things like enacting bans on plastics or even regulating artificial intelligence, right? So like there are, on the plastic side, there are bans all over the world. You got local, state, national. There's even in international context right now. There's the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee on Plastic Pollution that's trying to work as part of the UN Environmental Program. They're negotiating an international legally binding instrument of some kind on plastic pollution, including in the marine environment. They're aiming to try to get that negotiated and done by the end of 2024. So there's people operating on a societal scale at a bunch of different levels, right?
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting to me that we have this experience with banning straws and banning plastic bags at grocery stores.
Yeah.
And it's like, can we just up our game a little bit and get beyond that? And I mean, I think that's what these international treaties are trying to do, but it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in our communities.
Well, and I think this is a place where democracy really matters and people communicating to their elected representatives that this is important to them, because you know that there are huge vested interests. We just talked about the fossil fuel industry shifting into petrochemicals. They might give us a ban on straws, you know what I mean, in Corvallis, Oregon or whatever. Yeah. But like to say that there's going to be an international treaty or agreement of some kind that's limiting these things, there's going to be a huge amount of pushback. So it is kind of incumbent on us to engage, whether it's at the local level or national level, to support the right kinds of structural policies. And along those lines, with AI. So we talked a lot about plastics. We talked about AI. Our colleague, Richard Heinberg at PCI, just wrote a piece calling for a complete ban on all AI development. Now, that seems unlikely.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's setting kind of making a really strong case, you know, of why we should be considering that. And maybe it shifts the Overton window enough that we see that people are like, yeah, we at least need to regulate this. And not surprisingly, Europe is taking a lead on that. European Union officials, they just took a step trying to regulate AI. They reached a provisional deal looking at how they would do that kind of in the European Union context. We're in the heart of the beast here. We have the opposite, right? We have Sam Altman, whatever, going you know, to the
$7 trillion
government asking for $7 trillion, right? So we clearly have much more of a hurdle in this country.
Well, near and dear to my heart on this whole area is how do we get out of the car technology scene? How do we kind of tamp down the car infrastructure and make it better for bikes and for pedestrians and all that? And luckily, Sam Altman went to the federal government, asked for $7 for that. So we've got a $7 bike path coming. But no, seriously, that's another societal scale thing. We can try to work towards a less techno transportation system. I dream of this all the time. Like, you know how fun it would be to have awesome bike paths anywhere you wanted to go.
Yeah.
It'd just be incredible. Oh, come on. And then there's also the right to repair laws. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have devices now that, you know, your dream, Jason, of having something you understand. Like when your laptop breaks, like good luck even taking it to a place that's going to be able to fix it, right?
Right.
Your laptop is what, 8 years old or something. Yeah. It's just no way. It's so much cheaper to just replace the thing.
Well, you know, it's all a lot. What's interesting is a lot of like sort of conservative farmers are behind a lot of this right to repair stuff because they've seen over the last few decades their equipment get more and more difficult. And these are people that, you know, are mechanically inclined and they normally are able to go and fix stuff. And now if you get these new tractors, often you're not allowed to fix it.
Well,
you void the warranty.
Gosh, right? And think of the invest, like those cost what, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000?
$500,000 for like a combine or whatever, and you can't fix it. And then when the repair person comes in, can they get there in time? How much does it cost? So people are kind of up in arms about
it. And well, they could even, they've got remote kill switches.
Exactly.
They can shut you down.
Yeah.
You know, it's incredible. So hopefully these are some helpful ideas and suggestions and resources that we can share with our listeners. I want to talk just honestly about how difficult of a challenge this is. I think this is true. You know, this entire season is about escaping all these isms, right? And it is very difficult if you are part of modern industrial society to escape from any of these things.
Right.
I think it's particularly challenging when it comes to technology. Here we are talking about escaping technologyism, talking through these microphones into a computer that's recording us that's going to then get edited and shared with our listeners who are all listening to it on technology, right? And I think what's so difficult is that in some ways, what we're asking of ourselves and of our listeners is not a full escape. It's a figuring out how to manage, and I don't know. It's equivalent of moving from high tech to low tech. Mm-hmm. It's not no tech. It's straddling a little bit because in some ways, the easiest way to escape is either being like, fuck this, I'm out of here.
Right.
Homesteading, going back to the land, you know, joining an Amish community, even though actually the Amish are embracing some technology mm-hmm. now. So you might have to go really afar to do that because you're not faced with these difficult choices every day of navigating technology and participating in some of it. Or you do what the vast majority of people are doing, and that is you just embrace it. Try not to think about it. Try not to think about the consequences of it.
Right.
You know, because it's just a lot easier. So being in the space that we're talking about, which is this belief that technology is going to fix everything, our rush pell-mell and all of the investments that we're making into more and more technology, we know it's crazy making and it's setting us over the edge. But we can't totally walk away from technology. Right. And there's also changes in technologies that we have to grapple with and make choices around. So we've had this debate internally at PCI actually around AI. Mm-hmm. Here we've had Richard making a really strong case for basically a complete ban on all artificial intelligence. And we organizationally, like it or not, are using AI in ways that we sometimes don't even realize,
right?
You know, and so what do we do as an organization?
Yeah, how do I draw the line? So the example with Crazy Town is, remember we used to have Anya who would draw these awesome pictures for artwork for episodes, and it was really fun to work with her and say, hey, can you draw me this crazy thing? And she would do it, and we loved them, and then she went and got a job. It's like out in the world living her life.
So, hope she's doing well.
Yeah, I do too. I haven't talked to her in a while. But since we have some pretty weird imagery that we could use, we were looking at AI this year. You know, the image generators mm-hmm. have come online. So we were looking at the consumerism episode, and I go to ChatGPT and I say, hey, make me an aisle of a Toys R Us that's exploding plastic toys all over the place, and Jeffrey the giraffe is in the background vomiting on it, right?
Yeah.
And it draws you this picture, and you're kind of like, that's a really good, you know, a good representation of our show and of our tone. And yet, using AI to do something somebody creative like Anya was doing for us, it feels really kind of, you know, yucky, kind of hives-inducing.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that's a line we draw. We're kind of saying, okay, let's not do that. But then,
I think our shows are transcribed with AI.
Yes,
right?
The first draft of a transcript is done by AI, which is a tedious task that nobody wants to do. And we still have to correct that transcript to some level.
Yeah.
And the reason we do that is to make it more accessible to someone who maybe can't hear and wants to read it.
Well, and we've also looked at doing what's called text-to-voice AI software because, you know, there's a case to say we can make our content more accessible to people if we take a piece, like let's say Richard's piece on banning AI, and we run it through a text-to-voice generator using AI so that people who have vision impairment or it's a lot more easily shareable or accessible for people to listen to an article than to read it, we could reach more people that way, you know. And it's just like, what? This is crazy making.
Well, this is how do you be strategic? This is the thing. It's so many shades of gray because a lot of times what you're going to get is in the environmental activist community is sort of purism standards. And sometimes, I mean, that's taking a principled stand, but it also is giving up power. Yeah. And so then there's dynamic of
running the risk of being left behind.
Yeah, running the risk of being left behind.
But then you also run the risk of having to rename yourself the Hypocrite Society or something.
Yeah, and that's the thing is I don't think it's possible to not be hypocritical in this world. I think it's absolutely impossible. I go birding and I've got an AI on my phone that helps me understand like the language of the birds. Like, oh, that sound is actually this species. It's a wonderful, I mean, it's like what amazing a way for me to learn the birds, right?
Right.
So am I a hypocrite?
And where do you draw the line? I mean, we know Amazon is an evil freaking company, right? But we've seen this again and again. We've tried to, you know, direct people to go to their local bookshop to buy, you know, one of the books that we published at PCI. And we find again and again that people will go and buy it at Amazon instead.
Right.
It's so ubiquitous.
Right.
They dominate the market. You can buy something more cheaply, or maybe you can't even find it elsewhere, you know? And it's like, So where do we draw the line? And I just bring up the sort of internal debate and struggle for PCI as, you know, an honest representation, I think, of the struggle that we all as individuals have to grapple with.
Right.
And so it is, I think, what you had brought up before, I think it was you, Rob, which is basically trying to be conscious and conscientious about the decisions we're making. And when it comes to technologyism, it's living in that liminal space of recognizing that we're not dropping out of industrial technological society right now, but we are being very thoughtful about what we do and what we don't do. And then maybe having our foot in the other world, the low-tech world, you know, with what you talked about, Jason, in terms of taking on a skill set or saying, in this area, I'm not going to clean with a vacuum cleaner. I'm going to clean with a broom. I know it sounds silly. It's not going to change the world, the AMOC from tipping, you know, but it's something that could be done.
Yeah, well, and I don't even have a sorghum broom.
Well, let's plan on growing one of those for you this year. Okay, Rob?
Okay, and can we wheel hoe the weeds out of the way?
Yes, we can.
That's our show. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard and you want others to consider these issues, then please share Crazy Town with your friends. Hit that share button in your podcast app or just tell them face to face. Maybe you can start some much needed conversations and do some things together to get us out of Crazy Town. Thanks again for listening and sharing.
Do you suffer from acute anxiety whenever you can't find your smartphone or the battery dies? Are you hopeful we can master fusion energy as the ultimate response to climate change? Do you believe limits on Earth may be overcome by resources in space, or that AI will help humanity overcome all the threats to progress? Have you ever used these phrases? "But we have technology," or "they'll think of something"? If so, you likely suffer from technologyism, a debilitating mental health condition that infantilizes your responses to critical pressing issues. A cure for technologyism has eluded humanity until now. Introducing Reality Camp, a residential treatment center offering a comprehensive, intensive, multimodal intervention system that has proven effective in deprogramming those suffering from technologyism and offering a reality-based framework for moving forward in life. Reality Camp, because you have no idea how insufferable you are right now.
Brought to you by Ted Kaczynski.
Crazy Town. Da, 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 crazy Town.